Lead poisoning has been a major concern in cities like Flint, Michigan, and Newark, New Jersey. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 500,000 children in the United States between the ages of 1 and 5 have elevated lead levels in their blood. Our country's struggle with lead has a long and dark history, and it goes beyond our water supply. Much of it starts with the paint that's on millions of Americans' walls.
If you look at the history of where lead was placed in the United States, most of it is in aging lead paint in aging homes in the United States. There are millions of homes that are coated with old lead paint, and that really is, in most cases, the primary source for most children who are exposed to lead.
That's Christopher Wirth, the senior editor for WNYC News, and his reporting on the history of lead paint and its prevalence in the U.S. today is featured on WNYC's newest podcast, The Stakes. I asked Christopher to take us through the story of lead in the United States, beginning with our present day.
I think people have a general idea that there may be lead paint in their homes, but what I don't think many people realize is that that old lead paint creates a lot of lead dust. So this is not just about kids who eat paint chips. It's not just about keeping your kids away from that paint. That paint can create a lot of lead dust that ends up on the floors, on the windowsills, and that really is one of the primary routes of exposure for a lot of kids in the United States.
You met with a family in New York who are dealing with this issue. It's a mother and her young children. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
I felt wild. I keep seeing them with this white stuff on their mouths. I'm like, what's going on? Oh, mommy, the paint from the wall. I'm like, why y'all eating the paint from the wall? That's not nice. That's nasty. I took them to the doctor to get their physical done for school, and the doctor called me back with the results. The kids have lead poison.
Christopher, how is this able to happen in New York City?
So this woman, she's part of a program in New York City that actually helps survivors of domestic abuse find an apartment and pay for that apartment that's kind of a refuge. But this place turned out to be anything but, because the woman's children, as you heard in that clip, had started to pick away at this old aging lead paint on the windowsills. You know, I went into this apartment and there are actually bite marks on the windowsill. The thing about this whole lead situation is that the lead that went into paint, it's called white lead. It naturally has a very sweet taste to it. And so once a kid gets a taste of that, they want to taste a little more, they want a little more, they want a little more, so they keep eating it. And so in New York City, we have a lot of old apartments, old homes that still have a lot of this lead paint. And that's true in many cities across the United States.
You spoke with a public health historian who told you a little bit about the history of how the industry knew what it was doing.
Yeah, so here in New York, up at Columbia University, I met this public health historian. His name is David Rosner, and he has been looking at this issue for a really long time, since the 1980s.
Each gallon of lead paint had about 16 pounds of lead in it. Half the container was lead.
I mean, people in general knew that lead was dangerous from the very beginning. I mean, the ancient Greeks knew this. Benjamin Franklin wrote about the dangers of lead a long time ago. And the lead industry, the memos and the company records that David Rosner found, was that not only did the lead industry know that this material and that the products they were making was dangerous, but they created a marketing campaign to convince people that this product was safe because of that natural fear of it.
Now, you've also spoken to David Rosner about the fact that this also had a racial component to it. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
They say this in their memos. The only people who are really victimized by it are Puerto Rican and Negro people, and we can't do anything about that unless we really rebuild the housing. Ho-ho, that's not going to happen. Or alternatively, and they say this, educate their parents not to let them eat lead. And how does one accomplish that task, they say? How can we ever educate them? You know, this was an indication of the racism of a culture.
I've seen the memo that he's referring to in that clip. And what that is the head of the Lead Industries Association, a man named Manfred Bowditch, was writing to the former head of the Lead Industries Association, who at the time had become the Assistant Secretary for Mineral Resources under President Eisenhower. And they're responding to an article in Parade magazine that was talking about lead poisoned children. And each time these articles came out, the industry would try to respond in kind. And in that particular memo, they're trying to portray this as something that really did only affect Black Americans affect Puerto Rican Americans. The fact of the matter was those were the communities that were suffering the worst, particularly around the middle of the 20th century. So that particular memo was written around in 1940s, 1950s. And at that time, when you have white flight, people moving to the suburbs and these inner city neighborhoods where landlords had really left buildings to crumble, that's when this paint becomes even more dangerous because it's peeling off the walls, it's chipping off the walls, and kids are even more exposed to it. And so the industry really tried to pass this off as something that only affected them, and there was nothing that we could really do about it.
So federal government is turning its back at this point. The industry is targeting Black and brown children, specifically Black and Puerto Rican children. Who steps in at this point to make sure that someone does something?
At that time, in the late 60s, early 70s, you have this next phase of the civil rights movement. The Young Lords, you have the Black Panther Party. Those groups were actually going out into their communities. They were addressing these medical issues. And so around lead paint, the Young Lords, they actually obtained test kits and they were going door to door up in East Harlem, for example, trying to warn parents about the dangers of lead poisoning. I met this a former Young Lord. His name is Carlito Rivera.
And we would have literature ready to explain that we're testing because basically because this system is trying to kill you.
I think that what happened at that time, and David Rosner says this, is that they were really bringing this issue to the forefront of people's consciousness. They were saying, pay attention to this. There was a man named Herbert Needleman, who was a pediatrician from Philadelphia. He had been working out of Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, treating kids for lead poisoning. You know, at that time, people really only thought of lead as something that damaged kids at high doses. He started to wonder, what is it doing at these lower doses? And so what he started to do is go to schools and dentists throughout Philadelphia, and he started collecting baby teeth. Because what we know is that when lead enters the body, it acts a lot like calcium. It's what scientists call a bone-sinking element. And so it ends up in your bones, it ends up in your bloodstream, and it ends up in your brain. But if it's in your bones, he knew that it was also in these kids' baby teeth. And that was a way for him to get a picture of what a large group of kids in Philadelphia had been exposed to over many, many, many years. As you might expect, the Black children in Philadelphia had much higher levels of lead. But what they also found was that just in general, kids had been exposed to a lot of lead, no matter where they lived and no matter what their race is.
Christopher, was the fact that Dr. Needleman was able to identify that this was a problem not just in Black and brown communities, but also among more affluent white children, was that the turning point to make this an issue?
You know, a lot of the people who were involved in these studies, and one of them is the dentine expert in Philadelphia who actually analyzed these teeth and published with Needleman. And he really did say that he thinks that that's why the research got so much attention, is because, you know, counter to the story that the lead industry was telling, lead was ubiquitous. It was really everywhere because it wasn't just in paint. At that time, we were putting large amounts of lead into gasoline, and that was being burned and through tailpipes and in the atmosphere, and we were all breathing it. So the average lead level in 1976 in a child was about 15 micrograms per deciliter, which is considered very high today. Today in New York City, if your child tests at 15 micrograms, the health department gets to your house pretty quickly.
Christopher Wirth is a senior editor for WNYC News. Christopher, thanks so much for your reporting.
Thanks, Tanzina.
You can listen to more about the history of lead and how it impacts us today on WNYC's newest podcast, The Stakes. Find a link at thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.